Amy Sugar Addict Bulimic. Amen. Hi, everybody, and this is really a privilege. I was trying, the last number of times I've shared, I've written out a format, and it's really worked for me, but I'm really so bored with it. And nothing came together in terms of how to approach it today. So I just prayed about it, and hopefully you hear something that resonates with you. I've been a member of OA for a long time. I thought maybe I'd start it different, like, what is it like today? And then tell what brought me up there. Today I wasn't even sure I could talk because of some other, situations going on. And I was thinking how I handled that, telling Cassie I wasn't sure if I could come, and covering myself and being honest are all things I've learned in recovery, you know, because as a bulimic, it's by nature for me to just lie, cheat, and steal, to very much invested in image management, whether I'm conscious of it or not. And I'm also conscious in telling my truth. I think sometimes I wonder if I disappoint people, because life is still a struggle for me. On a daily basis, not necessarily with the food, but with my emotions, with my perceptions, with my ability to navigate life as it unfolds for me. That all being said, I am one happy camper. You know, my heart is full. I really like me today. I don't think about my body much. The food is not the way it used to be at all. I have fulfillment in my relationships. I have experienced satisfaction, which is something that was my life was devoid of when I came in. Food was the only thing. Bulimia and purging and drinking and using and trying not to use were the only things that kind of brought me entertainment and enjoyment in a perverse way. And that's not the case today. I have a very full life. What my life looks like now, I've raised 3 kids. I have been very involved in different volunteer organizations, most of that being recovery. I'm still married in spite of who I am and how all that plays out. I have a very normal life, and I think it's one that people would like to have, which I could never imagine, because I felt like such a loser when I came in, so defective, just trying to stay in the background so I didn't draw attention, because I was such a loser and failure at life. And that's not the truth today. And that's a miracle. And the fact that I actually have joy, in so many ways, I can laugh. It's sincere. Being a bulimic, my appearance looked normal, but it was done by perverse, you know, deceptive ways. And when I would act happy, it was all about acting so that I could deflect any kind of attention, because I didn't know what happiness was. I had never really felt it. And so I would mimic. I'd watch people of how they acted when they were happy, and that's what I would do. And so to have that become more congruent is just it's just lovely. This month, like I said, is my it's when I was given the gift of abstinence, which for me is no sugar to the best of my ability. And I'm really been forthcoming, because I make people perfect. They give me information and I create a perfect story. And that has not served me sometimes. So I want to say that too. I think I've had sugar in these years, but not my intention, you know? And so, which in the past has really tripped me up. Do you restart counting? Am I not abstinent? Am I, who do I tell? Who do I not tell? Will they understand? Will I understand? Was it? All of that goes on, and that I'm much more gentle with all of that today. And so so my intention is, I stopped drinking 2 months after I got abstinent, because I didn't give a rip about abstinence when I drank. Anything that takes me away, I don't care about abstinence. So I quit drinking before I could join that program legitimately. I gave up sugar. I became accountable with the food I took in, and that was a big part of my recovery. If I eat something, it stays in. You know, it doesn't, without the use of laxatives or purging or whatever other creative way I could figure out not to be responsible for the weight. It also included no laxatives, being accountable, telling people. So how that came about, Oh, and April was the date I came in. So I came in April of 1980, and then the following January, after a retreat or a convention, which Sunday afternoons after whatever spiritual thing I went to, it was when I just had the worst binges. It was like I couldn't tolerate having all this acceptance. I couldn't tolerate having any kind of joy or camaraderie with my fellows. It was just too overwhelming. And so I could be abstinent to the event, during the event, and it would blindside me every time where I would just hit the food running and maybe not come out of the coma until Monday or so. And it was so discouraging. And this one, wherever I was, I came home and I had that moment. And they talk about in the big book, if you keep coming back when that magic moment comes, you might be able to recognize it. Versus if I'm out in the world, I could my self-defeating mind would just not acknowledge it and going, oh, what was that? Whatever. And so I was able to recognize that moment. And at that point, I was willing to hold on by my nails. And I put my abstinence first. And prior to that, trying to give up the sugar, trying to keep the food in, trying to give up alcohol, I would have a day and then have weeks of purging and going into it. Then I'd have weeks of not doing anything, and all of a sudden one day. There was no logic to it. And I remember people saying, just keep showing up, keep coming back, and the miracle will happen. And I thought it was linear, like you want to hurt yourself less and less and less, and then you become good. And it wasn't like that. I thought I was never going to get abstinent. I thought I was going to choke someplace and I was going to die. And my only wish was that it wasn't with puke all over my face. You know, I wanted to go with dignity. I'm not in a bathroom, please. And so when I got abstinent, what a trip it was. My body was, I've been pretty much the same weight within, I don't think, 10 or 15 pounds my whole life, except when I was pregnant. And so that made me feel odd in this program, too, because back then, bulimia wasn't recognized as a term in the regular public. It was, I'm sure, in the hospitals and such. And so I just felt like, oh my God, I'm more disgusting than everybody here who already feels so low. And there weren't people to relate to, only a couple. But I did listen to when people talked about how they felt. I identified in more than I wanted to. It's funny, here I was looking for help, please help me, and I get in a program, I identify, and I don't want to identify with you guys. I got really arrogant, like, I really don't need this, as I'd go out and throw up as soon as I left the meeting. And so I realized during that time what a number my head was, that my problem probably wasn't the food, though that was a factor. It was more about how I thought. And so when that Sunday happened and I held on, and every time I get a physical reaction to that because it was so profound. I was throwing up 10 times a day while drinking, while laxatives. So to stop doing all of that was such a shock to my system. And I really bloated up, and I got, a lot of you guys are too young about polyester, but that had just come out. That was the miracle material that felt awful, but it had elastic waists. And I wore those so that I could be kinder to my body because my stomach just got way out. I was so unbalanced. And also prior to that, the tears started. And I mention that frequently today. You know what? I'm having a bodily reaction to that. I sobbed in meetings. People look so much more refined today in terms of their pain. They go, I'm hurting, but they look okay. It was, I didn't have to say I was hurting. I was a slobbering idiot. Just the pain was so bad. And people at meetings were so kind. They were just so kind. And I couldn't be kind to me, but they, not they, you guys, embraced me. And it was hard to take because I was really invested in proving how I was so unworthy, you know, to align with how I felt inside. So I went to a lot of meetings. I counted it once because I didn't know what a lot means. Sometimes people will say, I go to 3 meetings a week. I go to a lot of meetings. I went to 12 a week. I ate and binged between meetings, oftentimes. And I had nothing left of my life. I had a car and I had a bedroom. I was close to losing those. And in my recovery, I've become less dramatic. The truth is I was headed for the street, but I would have never gone there because people would have protected me. You know, that's the truth, but not of my own ability. And so I went to meetings, all 12 anonymous meetings. Some of them, ACA was just starting. CODA wasn't around yet. I went to Al-Anon, AA, closed, whatever, EA, OA, just to be around my people, because I knew for a little while I wouldn't feel compelled to eat. My food plan was just very, it's pretty lame. I was not into health. I was into keeping my food in. And so I drank coffee, so much coffee, so much. And I feel bad about the planet now because of those little styrofoam cups. How many did I go through in that? So much coffee and Tab, which is worse than, what do you call those things? You call battery cleaners. I drank that. I don't think I drank water much for years. And I had three huge meals. And I couldn't eat my dinner at home, so I went to Wendy's every night. Back then, they had a great salad bar, and I ate that every night for over 2 years. I adjusted my life to what I could and couldn't do. And I did that a long time until I didn't have to do that anymore. I was willing to stay with that food plan. I often refer to it as the Last Supper. It was so much food, and because my body was so used to throwing up, I regurgitated over and over again, and I liked it. There was something very satisfying about that, and I just felt scummy for that. I don't do that today. It's really cool. It took a long time for my body to heal, and it took a lot longer for my my mind and my psyche and my spirit to heal. So when I came into program, what happened there was my family immigrated from two other countries before we came to the U.S. and we ended up in New Hampshire. My mom was very broken as a result. Come on in. Was very broken as a result of her history. And when we came to New Hampshire, we came to a small town. And it was very isolating there. And so in her loneliness and in her brokenness, she did not have much to give to her own. Turns out later I found out that she was one of us without a program. And so I can only imagine how frightened she was and lonely she was in her life with three kids not speaking English. And so the program has given me the ability to just adore her. And she passed years ago, and I talk to her regularly. And just say, it's amazing you did what you did. You know, how cool. And I hated her when I came in. I didn't hate her. I hated how much her inability to show up for me affected me. I just felt like such a farce in this life. And I would perceive that other people just knew stuff that I never knew. I didn't know who I was. I was so empty. And I blamed her. And it was legit to blame, but through working the steps and through therapy, therapeutic help, you know, I was able, this amazing thing, the program is so freaking amazing. All that rage that I used purging to get rid of, through the steps and through the help of others, I don't have any of that today. And I can embrace her. And I know my mom is so happy to not be on this planet, and I delight for her. You know, I was restored to the love that I felt for her. Gives me goosebumps. Those first couple of years, all I could do was not go into my illness. And I called people, hated asking for help, I'd ask people if I could follow them. And so I'd follow people to grocery stores. I'd follow people, other friends that got together, I'd follow them in the park. I would just follow. And I sat in people's living rooms because I didn't want to eat and I wouldn't take from them. I asked people if I can join in for lunch so that I would be protected. This illness just is relentless. There's no logic to it. And so I humbled myself. And again, I wonder, have people risen to the bar? Because, God, I was so low, you know. Anyway, I kept coming in 3 years in this program. They talk about in the big book, this is a spiritual illness. And I didn't want to deal with that. It was just like, I don't want my body to grow and I don't want to puke anymore. I'm just so tired. If this is as good as it gets, whatever. And 3 years passed abstinence. And I had a mental breakdown and I ended up in the hospital for suicide. You know, and that reflecting back on that, I always think this is not about the food. It's my inability to live sober on this planet, to deal with what comes my way, how to embrace the good, the bad, and the ugly and not destroy myself, because it feels so right to destroy myself. While I was in the hospital, they helped me with the rage there. I love this because, you know, we all have a little drama thing in there. But I remember I was laying on the floor screaming and there were six or seven people holding me down. And I got off on that. I was like, whoa, look at this, like the movies, you know. And then I would think, oh, my God, I'm so pissed. You know, what do I do with this? What do I do? And this is what I ate over and threw up over and anorexed over and numbered over and drank over. I came out of the hospital and I got married, and it wasn't a healthy choice. It talks about in the big book, we take people hostage. And I married somebody because it seemed the more righter than the wronger. But I had a lot of time to work the steps on this over the years because I felt so bad that because of where I was, that I took somebody else's hostage, like they say. And it made marriage difficult, but again, the program, the fellowship, and other 12-step programs helped me to navigate that, and we just celebrated 34th or 35 years, you know, and he hasn't killed me, I haven't killed him, and so that's amazing. And so during that time, after the rage passed, I didn't know how to live, and the steps became way more important to me in the third and fourth year than they were when I came into recovery. In recovery, I could embrace powerlessness, but I didn't get the rest. I couldn't even hear it. I couldn't understand the words. I really didn't care. Just make me stop binging. You know, they talk about the only way you can do the steps if you're abstinent, or the only way or do the steps whenever you start and you become abstinent. I don't know. The longer I'm around, the less I know. But when I did the steps, nobody wanted to work with me because I was such a full, you know, people came in this program to recover and I was a handful. And so the first five steps, the first time I did it was five different people, you know, and so you don't have to work with one person. And I guess as I'm talking about, my theme is work it the way you work it. There is no right way. The right thing I did, and people say that as I kept coming back. And I keep showing up, and I keep doing service, and I keep talking, and I keep trying to tell my truth. I got married, and a few years later, intimacy. What's up with that? I had no clue how to do that, and so the logical thing was I got pregnant. I mean, you know, the illogical, they talk about, those of us who don't find this program and find the steps and traditions are just a nightmare out in the world. And I just tell people all the time, I'm so grateful I'm not acting out in society and having my family have to witness what she did again because she felt so right, you know. And so I got pregnant and had a child. He was almost a year or around a year old, and I realized that my parenting skills that I had become loyal to with my parents, and they were very ineffective on a lot of levels, I wanted to put on this child, and they were about shame and guilt. It felt like I wanted to guilt him, shame him. I wanted him to be good, you know, and what being good cost me was becoming bulimic, you know, and the anger. So I went to another 12-step program, and I encourage people, there's so many different 12-step programs that I have to keep my food clean. I have to stay in OA and take advantage of all the other things to help me learn how to live. Later on, why not have more, you know? So I couldn't get pregnant, and I was getting older, so I had IVF, I think that's what it's called, in vitro. And I was drugged for those two pregnancies, and there was it was one of the first 1,000 kids here in pregnancies in Denver. I did not know how to talk about, I was a Looney Tunes with all those drugs, you know, but people in program, without even identifying, supported me through that. And because of this program, I was just telling people, you know, I've got three super kids. They seem to be really cool human beings in spite of me, you know, my best efforts. So they're all grown now, and I had kids late, so they're not old, but they're grown. I today still go to between 3 and 5 meetings a week. I still talk to at least 5 or 6 or 7 or more people a day. Is that the 10? Oh, 20. Okay, thanks. I call in my food when I feel inclined to do so. I tell on myself when I get wonky, you know, and that's the thing. For me, it's about being honest. And this program is my only hope at being honest, because left to my own, if I float away, dishonesty seems real logical. It seems even righter. I sponsor people, and I still feel so inadequate in that, but I show up anyway. I pray every day. I get on my knees most days. I've learned all the prayers in this program by heart, and I just go over them and over them. I highly recommend it. Through doing that, I plug into the solution. When I'm outside the country or elsewhere, I make use of WhatsApp and text, and I text, and I text lots of people, and then they start responding, and that keeps me grounded. I think the iPhones and the smartphones were made just for me, so that I could live outside my little circle. I'm involved in different parts of recovery, and presently I'm trying to pull back, because I took on a lot of stuff for a lot of time, and I really think it's other people's time, and also it's a healthy move for me to move back and let other people. And I also take seriously that because I've been given so many gifts that I need to support the people that come in. And so whether it's intergroup or whether it's 12-step or whatever, I make myself visible and available in the background. And that is really cool, because when I came in, there weren't elders. The program was so new. So I put that out there because I think our recovery needs it to keep vibrant. My relationship with my higher power so changes as a spiritual solution. As long as my food stays clean and I do self-care, I take care of my body and I take care of my mind. My mind is the one that is really the challenge. That's why I stay in touch with people. I write a lot. I'm in therapy, in and out of therapy at times. I seek the spiritual solution in life, and I choose to share. I think that's my responsibility, especially to newcomers, when they're ready to share my experience on that, because that has longevity. The food plan does not. You know, the food plan left me emptier and more vulnerable to the pain of life. So that's when I got going on the spiritual solution. Every time somebody shares something, I feel like they're speaking to me. My relationship with my higher power is amazing. And it just makes me smile, because it's an all-day conversation now. Whatever I'm doing, even when I came in here, I thought, please let me have something of value to say. Because my mind, I was thinking the other day, there's an insidious undermining, which is the ism and the alcoholism and the foodism for me. It's constantly telling me I'm still not enough. I'm not doing it right. I'm skewed. What the hell? That's kind of, and I just can't listen to it. So I have to really have a continuous conversation with my higher power. I laugh a lot. I can own my spiritual relationship now outside these circles, and whatever those looks or whatever. I'm very open with my anonymity, because there's so many people suffering out there, and I hope I can be an example that we don't, because my fear was I was going to turn into a loser and a geek being in here. You know, I was going to have no fun. We're all going to dress like nuns, and we're just going to have quiet time and be happy. And it's like, I want a sexy life. I want to have fun. I want to have enrichment and such. And so I pray for the ability to show that, because that brings people in, that there's a solution here. The steps, I keep working them over and over again. I'm hungry for new ways to do the inventory. I go through the steps, and then I start over. I go through steps and start over. And I'm glad that I don't have a comment about that, that's a loser mentality. I think that's a winner mentality. the meeting I mentioned on tomorrow night is so important, and that's why I show up. People need to see recovery at those meetings. The people that aren't part of this program or the people that are new, or like the speaker. The speaker is a new speaker and is a male bulimic. You know, that is so cool that men are coming in here, that we go out and support. And I can almost become like a preacher with that. I don't think we support each other enough when it matters. And so I want to be an example of that. There's hope in this program. I guess the last thing I want to say is I have been very lost lately. I feel like I don't have a mentor to hold the space, since when I came in, there weren't a lot of people long time. I don't know what long time now looks like. I don't know what it's supposed to be. And so I feel lost a lot, just like I did early on. The difference is that I have hope and I'm not mean to me. I'm very gentle with myself, which as a bulimic was so contrary to my existence. I talk to my little kid all the time going, honey, I know it's hard. It's really hard. But if you just don't eat, call somebody, talk. Wait. It's so sweet that I cannot just be so damn mean. And it felt so right when I came into recovery. My higher power today makes me laugh. I also have created a relationship with the who I am and who I have the potential to be with my higher power's help. And I'm open to that. So I spent a lot of time talking to myself, because there was nobody home when I came into recovery. And so I have a relationship with myself. I do like me. I find myself hysterical at times when I don't want to blow my brains out because I feel so lost. This disease has so many dimensions. I thought it was just about the size of my thighs and keeping my food in. And it's none of that. It's all about community. It's about feeling one amongst, you know, it's me getting out of myself. It's me feeling one of you. It's me being honest. It's me being committed one more day, just for today, seeking a spiritual solution and just showing up in whatever space I am. So, anyway, thank you.